Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Riverfront, the world's most dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me again, this is going to be a fun one. I'm excited here. We got a couple of guys that I'm really looking forward to talking to. First of all, we'll talk to the guy that's right next to me on your screen. This is from redlegnation.com. I've heard of that site. And also redsminorleagues.com. It's Doug Gray. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing good, Chad. How are you?
Man, I'm living the dream here. Living the dream.
That's all we can ask, right?
Exactly. Also with us for, the first time since we went to a video format. Actually, I guess it's the first time for both of us since we went to a video format. But a guy who has been so kind as to invite me on his program. He's been with Red Leg Nation for a long time. And he's also the guru behind the Late Night Reds Talk show on YouTube. Incredible show, mostly incredible just because I've been on there a couple times, but it's Nick Kirby. Nick, man, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Chad.
Absolutely. And I'll just say off the top, go to redlegnation.com, go to redsminorleagues.com, and listen, if you care anything about, if you're watching this show, you care about Reds content, you got to enjoy Late Night Reds Talk. You guys are doing a fantastic job over there, Nick, and keep it up, I guess. I'll say that. Anything you want to say about Late Night Reds Talk before we dive right in?
Yeah. If you don't know about it, we're doing the show every Monday night during the off season. Probably going to go back to Wednesday during the season when it gets on. But 9 o'clock every week, we love to answer questions. Do it as live interactive. So come join it, and then we put it up on a podcast on everywhere you get podcasts.
Absolutely. And, I tell you all at the end of every one of these episodes to smash that like button and the subscribe button and do that as well for Late Night Reds Talk. Doug, I guess everybody here probably knows about Red Leg Nation and Reds Minor Leagues because that's all we've talked about since 2007 when we started this show. But I'll let you, since I gave Nick a chance, I'll get anything else you want to say about what's going on right now at Red Leg Nation and Reds Minor Leagues?
Really, right now, there's not a whole lot going on because, well, the owners have locked out the players and there's, I mean, they can't really do much. So, no.
I get it. I get it. Well, let's talk about that. Let's dive into the news of the week before we get into our topic of the week. News of the week, there's not a lot, obviously. I mean, the lockout is the thing. And the news this week, I'm gonna toss this one to you first, Nick, if you don't mind. The news this week, and the reason I'm tossing this one to you is Nick is what I like to, I love his optimistic outlook on the Reds. And I need you to tell me something to be optimistic about because the news in terms of the lockout is not great this week, is it?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm as optimistic about the lockout as I am about the Reds. It's just not looking good. I mean, I feel like it's more likely than not the season's going to get delayed at this point. That's just kind of, I guess, my gut feeling. I mean, we're talking like, 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. And if there's not a deal by then, I mean, it's going to be delayed. They're not going to, rush these players back and, get guys hurt. And that's where I think it really will hurt everyone involved is if the season gets delayed. I don't think it's honestly that big of a deal to this point. I don't think most people are worried about football and everything, but that opening day parade gets pushed back. That's going to really tick a lot of people off that more so than the, us guys who, follow everything on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Doug, thoughts?
I mean, I think we've got roughly 1 month until we kind of hit that deadline of we're going to start losing regular season games. I mean, we saw what happened in 2020. They kind of ramped up for their quote unquote summer vacation or I don't know, whatever, summer camp, is that what they called it? They need about three and a half weeks to get ready from not having anything to let's play a season. First games are set to start at the end of March. They've got a month. The news that came out this afternoon did not seem good. I don't know if everybody saw that or not, but it seems that the ownership group is not going to make another proposal to the players. And they've called for help from some national labor relations board kind of, it's not the national labor relations board, but something similar to that to kind of help negotiate the process. But this board does not have any power to implement anything. So basically they're just asking for a third party to come in and kind of give them advice. But it just seems that things are not really moving in any sort of direction forward.
Yeah, this was the first week when I really, again, I've tried to be optimistic about this because I thought the money involved was going to be too much to for the owners to ignore, frankly. This week was the week when I started to get a little apprehensive about whether we're going to get games on time. And of course, you know, what's the big deal? 1995, they didn't play a full season and the Reds won the division. 1990, I don't remember what happened that year, but it was, there was a lockout to begin that year. So this is me just trying to rationalize some way to believe that the Reds are going to be in the playoffs. But it just, to me, I know that one of our co-hosts, who is one of my favorite people in the world, went on a rant a few weeks ago in favor of the owners. and Nick, your co-host on Late Night Reds, Carlos, he has some things to say about that. I'm going to get him on with our other co-host at some point. It looks to me like it's the owners just deciding they want to wait the players out. Am I wrong about that? I mean, am I misconstruing that? Doesn't it look a lot like the owners just we're gonna wait them out and they will give in eventually?
I mean, I don't know if that's exactly their plan, but it seems that their plan is you are going to do exactly what we want, or we're not doing anything. With all the proposals from the owners so far, basically they've tried to reward themselves rather than actually give the players anything. I mean, one of the proposals was we're going to give ourselves a draft pick for not breaking the rules of manipulating service time. Like, that was their proposal, to reward themselves for not breaking the rules. When the players came back with the, hey, we want to give extra money to the very top players who are not arbitration eligible, we want a pool of $110 million. And then the owner's like, yeah, we'll give you $10 million to divide up between 30 players. That's $300,000 each. Like, that's nothing. And that was basically their give, was giving them 10% of what they asked for. And that was basically the best offer they had, and they're not going to come back with it. And it just seems that they're taking a hardline stance right now, and they don't want to truly negotiate in any sort of good faith, in my opinion.
And Nick, you alluded a moment ago to what's the most frustrating part about all of this, which is that it's something I have to keep reminding myself, which is that if they actually play, the Reds don't have a bad team this year, right? You know, the Dan Zimborski's Zips projections came out, had the Reds at roughly a 500 team in a division that's not going to be particularly great. So, you know, there's reason to believe the Reds could be actually competitive. And you tell me whether you feel the same way, Nick, but that's what's frustrating to me, is that this team, they're flawed, but they got a real chance to be okay, and the owners and players, maybe both parties, I don't know, but they're screwing with our chance to watch what could be a fun team.
Yeah, I mean, you could, you know, take aside your feelings on what the Reds have done with cutting players and, you know, not spending and all that. The Reds are still going to have a better team than most of the teams we've watched in our lifetime. I mean, that's the fact, as it stands right now. Granted, things could change very quickly, you know, in their – the 2 weeks of free agency trade, you know, time period that they'll have. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely a team that is going to be competitive. The interesting thing is, I was kind of looking at the schedule, is from everything I've heard, they would just start the schedule wherever they start the season, which makes sense, because I don't know why you would make games up, because what leverage would the owners have if they're just going to say, oh, well, we'll let you make the games up that we pushed back. You know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't really make sense. So, I hope that they just don't start like a week late, because then the Reds miss a series with, I think, Cubs and Pirates are the first two series. But if they started a little later, the Reds could miss road trips to L.A., St. Louis, and Atlanta, I think, or maybe Padres are in there. Like, three really difficult road trips. So that's another kind of weird factor in this, is starting late could really hurt the Reds. It actually could help the Reds depending on when they would start. But I obviously, we all just hope the season starts on time and we have a normal baseball season. We haven't had a whole lot of normal baseball seasons recently.
Yeah, that's a fact. And that's certainly what I still have my fingers crossed. We're getting to the point where that's not going to happen, but we're not there yet, I don't think. But yeah, I mean, even if the Reds make no moves, and again, we're not going to dive down that hole because we've done it too many times about what the Reds are going to do. But even if they do nothing, there's so much fun about this team. There's so many fun players. There's so much to like about the team as currently constructed. And you know, you can kind of squint your eyes, Doug. I'll ask you if you agree, but you can kind of squint your eyes and see a team. There's no reason why they should not be competitive in the National League Central, at least.
Yeah, you know, I really do think that what happens in center field and what happens at shortstop is going to make or break this team. If Nick Senzel is healthy and performs as he has been expected to, that's going to go a long way.
That's not unreasonable to think, right? That's not.
No, I mean, it's really not. I mean, the same thing with Jose Barrero. If he can get going at the plate this year, you know, if he performs relatively as expected, I mean, those are two big holes that are filled. And, I mean, look around them. You've got Jesse Winker. Now, we don't know who's going to end up playing left or right field, depending on what they do with Winker. But you've got, you know, Mike Moustakas. You've got Eugenio Suarez. You've got Joey Votto. You've got Tyler Stevenson. You've got Jonathan India. I mean, that's a formidable lineup, right? I'm not crazy. Yeah. And then, you know, the pitching rotation is good. You know, I think they're going to miss Wade Miley a little bit, but even with him gone, they've still got a good, solid rotation with potential. The bullpen, you know, it's going to be, for the most part, what we saw in the second half last year, which was pretty good. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with the bullpen. Injuries happen. That can really change everything, but yeah. It's a solid team, and if a few things go right for them, I mean, I think they're right there.
Yeah, it's not like the 90 loss teams where we were like, okay, this has to go right, and that has to go right, and this has to go right. They're not that far off. And, you know, the starting rotation, even without Miley, they're still going to have a little bit of depth with the kids coming up. And, again, you don't have to squint too hard to see a really decent team. Nick, let me ask your opinion on Nick Senzel. Because to me, he's kind of like the wild card. If Nick Senzel becomes the Nick Senzel that we expected and that he played like all throughout his minor league career, that completely changes to me the look of this outfield. If he's injured or he doesn't perform like we hope for, then this outfield I have a lot more questions about. What are your thoughts on Senzel, Nick?
I mean, if he just stays healthy, the Reds are a completely different team. We don't even need to talk about a giant leap forward. Just him being on the field with his defensive value, his base running. He's shown throughout his career so far that he can at least hit left-handed pitching above average. So, and what was one of the Reds' biggest problems last year? Hitting left-handed pitching. So just him being on the field is going to instantly make the Reds better. And he obviously has the upside to do what Jonathan India did last year.
Right.
One thing that I want to say, and I'm curious if you guys are with me on this or not. If you look at this team, who other than Joey Votto would be like a regression candidate? And I'm not saying Joey Votto is going to regress. Don't twist my words here. I'm done predicting Joey Votto. I'm just going to watch and enjoy at this point. But other than him, who would be a regression candidate? Like, everyone is on an upward trajectory outside of Suarez and Moustakas, but they can't be worse than they were. So, like, who's a regression candidate?
I'll let Doug address that in a minute, but let me just say something. I have never really thought about this Reds offense in that way. And if you look at it, I can't think who might be other than Votto. But again, I'm like you. I'm never going to. I will always trust Votto until the day he retires. I'm done questioning him. But that's a really good way to think about it. Yeah, Moustakas and Suarez are just what they are. But the other guys, a lot of upside, and so you can. I always say you can squint and see what it might be. You could kind of see this offense being way better than they were, Doug.
I mean, I think the biggest thing would be, does Jonathan India have that sophomore slump? I don't think he's going to. I'm not expecting it, but you know, what if he only gets hit by pitches half as often as he did last year? He's going to make up that on base percentage somehow. Will that come because he's got more experience? His eye is going to be a little bit better. Pitchers are more careful around him, given what he did in the second half with that power that showed up. You know, maybe that plays out in a slightly different way. And then, I mean, Jesse Winker, maybe just because he was so good last year. You know, there's a lot of wiggle room for him to, quote unquote, go backwards but still be very good.
Right.
I mean, but really, I mean, those are just the two guys that also perform very well that, you know, maybe they could have a little bit of regression just because they did play so well, and it's tough to be that good.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to though to think about this the offense next year, which is just you know, there's a lot of upside. I guess is the way to put it. A lot of upside. But I guess I'll ask you this question: what do we think about right field though, with the roster as currently constructed? Assuming that Winker's in left field, what's our right field look like? I'll let either of you jump in on that.
I think it's a mix and match at this point. You know, I'm still holding out hope that there's a possibility of Castellanos being extended until I see him sign somewhere else. I'm going to hold out hope. I don't have a lot of hope that it would be like another free agent right fielder, but if there's one thing, you know, Castellini ownership group has shown is that they do love these players that have grown some sort of connection with the fan base. You know,
that's true.
So I'm going to hold out, but let's say he is gone. I mean, I think you're going to mix and match. One thing that obviously replacing his bat would be, you know, very, very difficult, but the Reds should be able to improve some on the defense to get some of that value back. And India, for example, I think he's going to be better defensively no matter what. So maybe if his on base goes down a little bit, maybe his defense improves. And I mean, all that stuff adds up, you know, 5 defensive run saves, that's worth, I don't know what, 20 on base per points, something like that. So maybe some of those little things, I think it's more of, you know, where can you get value here and here and here and here, as opposed to just replacing one big guy. I think you got to think of it in little tiny increments.
I think that's a good point. You know, with India in particular, even if he flatlines or, you know, it's kind of the same offensively, he's not played a lot of second base before last year. And so, and as athletic as he is and as young as he is, you would expect him to be able to improve. That's not a bad point. Doug?
Yeah, I think that Nick's probably right. They're going to mix and match.
Whoa, slow your roll. Let's not give Nick too much credit.
well, in my opinion, definitely not agreeing with Nick. We just had the same similar thoughts here. You know, I mean, the Reds have options, you know, that we saw last year. They were willing to play Jose Barrero in center. Maybe that means on certain days, Kyle Farmer goes and plays shortstop. Barrero moves to the outfield, you know, depending on the matchup. They've got, you know, Aristides Aquino. You know, I know that Shogo has not hit anything, but they're not going to just leave him on the bench the entire season. He's going to get some starts every now and again. You know, maybe TJ Friedl works his way into the rotation a little bit. I mean, they have options. I do think that if they don't bring back Castellanos, which personally I'm not expecting to happen, I hope to be very, you know, gladly surprised if it does, but I'm not expecting that. That it is just going to be a mix and match, you know, maybe who's hitting well right now. Maybe it's going to be a matchup thing with lefties and righties. And it may not even come down directly to the outfield. Like I said earlier, you know, maybe the Kyle Farmer, Jose Barrero thing comes into play, and who plays shortstop that day kind of dictates who's playing left or right field that day, wherever they wind up putting Winker. Because, Winker did play left field, but he was trying to talk his way into playing right field until Castellanos signed, who prefers right field. So yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if Winker moved back over to right field and then they put somebody else in left.
Well, you know, I mean, if a lot of ifs here, I will concede that. But if Senzel is just something close to what we hoped, if he's healthy and something close to what Senzel can be, then really you're talking about one outfield spot per day. And that's, you know, if that's filled by Aristides Aquino and Tyler Naquin and,
I don't know how TJ I forgot about Tyler Naquin. That's, yeah.
Right. TJ Friedl and Barrero sometimes. And I don't know, you can maybe roughly get an average other outfielder the rest of the time. And that's, I'll take that. You know, there are some names.
Obviously Senzel, that's, I'm with you on that. That's huge because that shifts everyone over and makes it better. You put Tyler Naquin in right field, I think he can come close to matching the value of Castellanos versus right-handed pitching, because he's going to be a better defender. And if you look at their career numbers, they're not that different against right-handed pitching. Obviously, left-handed pitching, that's a much, much different story. But on any given night when you're facing a right-handed starter, I don't think there's as big of a drop-off as maybe people would think if you kind of really look at the numbers and kind of what they've done throughout their careers against right-handed pitching only.
Yeah, just versus right-handers. And although the same thing with Naquin that you think about with Senzel, which is that Naquin has had some trouble staying on the field throughout his career as well. You got to kind of toss that into the mix. But you're not wrong. Against right-handers, Naquin has been an above-average contributor, certainly, and probably better. Not that Naquin is a superstar defensively, but probably better than Castellanos.
They played center field, so you know you would think sliding him over, he's just naturally going to be better than Castellanos, who was, you know, for as good of offensively as he was, you know, one of the towards the bottom at the defensive spectrum.
Yeah, he's a good hitter. He's a good hitter.
Defensively, the best we can say about him is he's a good hitter, right? Well, okay, so let me kind of shift gears just a little bit because I have real concerns, maybe you all do as well, probably you all do as well, about current leadership in terms of the front office with the Reds. But I think Baseball America came out with their farm system rankings, and Doug, you're kind of the minor league guru, have been for many years. Baseball America gave pretty good marks to the Reds minor league system going forward. Now, whether the Reds can translate that into major league success, we're not going to talk about that today, but pretty good ranking from Baseball America, right?
Yeah, I guess I need to start out and say that I do write for Baseball America, but I had nothing to do with any of the rankings. They didn't ask for my input on that. But yeah, they ranked the Reds farm system 7th overall. And I mean, that's the top third. Now, unfortunately, the Pittsburgh Pirates were ranked 2nd, so or maybe they were ranked 3rd. I'm sorry, and so they beat out everybody else in the National League Central except for the Pirates. And I mean, really, you know, for as much as we probably all agree that there's some issues in the Reds front office, they're not the Pirates. So
true.
If we're gonna look at the future aspect of things, the Reds do look a little bit better than everybody else in the division right now.
And that's largely on the backs of Hunter Green, my guy, Hunter Green, please be healthy. Nick Lodolo, Jose Barrero, and Eli De La Cruz, right? Anybody else? I think those are the real names, right?
I mean, that was the top four. Yeah. You know, I mean, the Reds have a lot of depth behind those guys too. I mean, Graham Ashcraft was the number 9 rated prospect by Baseball America. And I mean, I feel like I could argue that he's a top 100 prospect. I mean, there's a lot of really good guys in the system right now.
Yeah, my guy Nate, who was not able to join us tonight, I was hoping he was going to be able to, but Graham Ashcraft is his guy. He's just in love with that guy. Nick, any thoughts about that going forward?
Well, number 7 and Doug, thank you. You actually wrote and you clarified that Barrero was included on that list, which I feel like that's a distinction, you know. But they're number 7. They also still have, you know, Jonathan Indy and Tyler Stevenson. They're not on that list, but they're only 1 year removed. They're like just barely above a prospect. So when you have players that are, you know, still have multiple years of control added in with that, I mean, I think you really look at a really nice window coming up, and it's just, I guess, navigating to that window and when does that window start and all of that. That's really, I guess, the biggest questions right now.
This is why I get so frustrated, because there really is a window with good leadership in the front office and ownership. You have the makings of a team that could be exceptionally competitive going forward. I mean, like, you really have that base where you just have to kind of fill in some holes. And I don't want to get mad at the Reds for things they haven't done or failed to do yet. I see some worrying signs. But if you're wanting to be optimistic, man, there's so many good young players here that you can build around that if someone wanted to be serious about turning this into a real team, it's not that far away. It really isn't. Unless you all want to argue with me about that, and please do.
No, you're right.
Wow. Say that. Can you say
no.
that again?
No, I will not Please. Repeat myself.
I've never heard you say that before.
I don't believe that's true.
Nick's always been kind to me, but Doug's never admitted I was right about anything. Okay, before we get to the topic of the week, I think we have to talk about the biggest news in Cincinnati this week. Any comments on the football squad in town?
I've been enjoying it. I have. I kind of went on a hiatus after the Steelers loss a couple years ago in the playoffs. It was just the last straw for me. I couldn't do it anymore. Joe Burrow brought me back last year. It was fun this year. It was really fun for the first time in Cincinnati sports, and I mean professional sports at least, in quite a while for me. So, yeah, it's been fun, Chad. It's been fun.
Yeah, we have a viewer mail question that'll relate this to the Reds in a little while, but I'd given up on the NFL literally like 10 years ago. I wasn't enjoying it, and so I just kind of gave up and got into soccer a little bit, but Joe Burrow last year kind of got me back into it a little bit was rewarded with that this year, and I don't know, fingers crossed, hope they win in a couple weeks. Nick, if you have anything to say, jump in. If not, we'll go to the topic of the week.
Yeah, I won't act like I'm the biggest football fan in the world. It's harder to follow an NFL team in Cleveland. You know, once I kind of moved, I kind of really kind of followed. But it was so cool seeing the city and all the. I watched every single video I could see. I mean, and I don't have this big emotional attachment to the Bengals, but just seeing everyone so excited in the city I grew up in, that was really cool. And hey, one day it's going to happen for the Reds. I know we'll have dark days, but it's going to happen. Look, if it can happen to the Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals.
True.
It's going to happen to the Reds at some point. I fully believe that. And when it does, I mean, I was almost crying watching these Bengals videos. Like, I will be sobbing. You know, just hope someone gets that on video and can make fun of me for it.
I'll tell you this. When the Reds finally win in the National League Championship Series to advance to the World Series, we're going to all be together. And I don't know how it's going to happen. We're going to be together and high-fiving, and it's going to be fun. It's going to happen at some point before I die. Okay, so this week's topic of the week, again, if you clicked on this link, you already know what the topic of the week is because it's probably in the title. And the topic of the week is the top five Reds catchers of all time. You know, last week we did the top five starting pitchers. Bucky Walters was the consensus pick as the best starting pitcher in Reds history. Either of you have an objection to that? No? Bucky Walters? Nobody wants to vote for Luis Alberto Bonilla?
I mean, come on, guys. I figured you would.
I did not, surprisingly. Catcher's not the most exciting position. We'll kind of run through this pretty quickly. But we have our top five, and I think we all agree with many of these. But let's dive into this before we get to first base next week and probably make some old-time Reds fans mad when we pick our top first baseman of all time. So catchers, number five, we all had different number fives in terms of our top five list of the best Reds catchers of all time. I'll go to you first, Nick. Who's your number five in your top five Reds catchers of all time?
This was really tough. I mean, I feel like the first four, like, was pretty obvious. You could right. flip a couple, but it was pretty obvious. You couldn't go one or the other. But this was tough. Definitely could make a case for Ryan Hannigan just on the wins above replacement alone. He's certainly absolutely deserving. I went with Eddie Taubensy. His wins above replacement numbers are really rough. Of like the catchers that had more than 2,000 plate appearances, he was the only other one that was an above average hitter. And just if you're going to be in the top five, I want at least you to be an average hitter. So I went with Taubensy. I think the WAR probably is a little messed up on him. I don't think it calculates right. They weren't you know doing good defensive metrics and all that back then. But yeah, I went with Taubensy at five.
Yeah, Eddie Taubensy. If you don't remember him, man, mid to late 90s, that guy was legit. And I mean. I can't argue with that choice at all. And I considered him for my number five spot. If you don't know, you need to learn about Eddie Taubensy. Doug, you're
over an 800 career OPS with the Reds. I mean, that's for a catcher, man. That's really good.
Absolutely. Great left-handed bat. Doug, who was your number five?
I went with Ryan Hannigan. The number one job of a catcher is to be good defensively. And he was really stinking good. And, you know, he wasn't Eddie Taubensy at the plate, but he was a good hitter for a catcher. You put those two together, and especially with, you know, you really could pick any of probably 10 to 15 guys for that number five spot. He's the guy that I remember. He stood out the most to me, so I went with him, and I'm okay with that pick.
I love the fact that Hannigan is in this group of guys we're talking about that are in competition for this number five spot, because the top four are, and we'll get into those, but Hannigan was not drafted. You know, he was an undrafted free agent, and nothing was ever given to him. He had to work the whole time, and he legitimately had a productive big league career, and certainly one of my favorite Reds of all time, frankly. But you're wrong, but that's not a bad pick for number five. My number five, I struggled. I had three different guys. The first guy I thought about was, we got to give it to Kyle Farmer, right?
No, we don't.
Nick, any comments about?
He caught a couple magical starts of Alex Wood, right? I mean,
Alex Wood era.
Alex Wood was a Red.
We've forgotten. Right. The guy I almost gave it to was Devin Mesoraco. And Mesoraco, really short career. Mesoraco, he committed to play collegiate baseball at the University of Virginia and then came to the Reds. So I'm okay with that. And just injuries. But what people may not remember about Mesoraco, that kind of incredible 2014 season was, if you look at wins above replacement, was among the top 10 all-time seasons in for Reds catchers, individual seasons. So top 10, we're talking about top five now, but that top 10, there are only three guys who are in that top 10 season. Johnny Mitch had eight of the top 10. So Mesoraco had one of the best seasons ever for a Reds catcher. So I really considered him, but here's who I'm going to give it to. And I didn't put this on our list. We talked about it ahead of time, but I'm my number five best Reds catcher of all time, Tyler Stevenson. He's going to be there by the time it's over. Tyler Stevenson is that good. He's going to be there. He hasn't done it yet, and maybe not, but this is my prediction. He's one of the top five Reds catchers that have ever played for this organization. Tell me why I'm insane.
I mean, I feel like you're cheating because you didn't tell us that we could do that, and that would have changed my answer too.
I actually did have something prepared on Tyler Stevenson because I didn't want to mention him on this. I didn't feel like I could throw him on this list yet, but if Tyler Stevenson has the career that Ramon Hernandez had, remember Ramon Hernandez, the career he had, he will easily be one of the top three Reds catchers of all time. If he has the career that Jonathan Lucroy had, he would be the second best Reds catcher of all time. That's like the bar for him. I don't think he's going to catch bench. If he catches bench, then we're probably having multiple World Series titles on our right. hands. I don't think anyone's ever going to catch bench. But yeah, I mean, I think he'll definitely at minimum get that fifth spot.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's my thought. Tyler Stevenson, I said it last year when Jonathan, and I love Jonathan India, but you know he was doing so well. I said it a couple times. Tyler Stevenson is going to have more All-Star appearances going forward than any player on that roster last year, I think. I think he's going to end up, again, it's going to be health and there's a lot of variables, but that guy is going to be one of the best catchers in baseball. And if the Reds can hang on to him, there's no reason he's not on this list when we talk about it again in 10 years.
As long as Molina doesn't play another 10 years, I mean, he could have like a 450 OPS and be the National League starting catcher. So.
Oh my gosh.
Why would you put that out into the world?
You know, it's true. I mean,
doesn't mean I want to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Nick, you know, we don't really talk about neck tat on this podcast. So I'm a little upset with you right now. This may be your last appearance on the show. I'm sorry.
Just mute me for about 5 minutes.
Right. Okay. So let's go to number four. I'll talk about my number four first, because it's also Doug Gray's number four. And Nick had him actually at number three. And it's Bubbles Hargrave. And a lot of you, Hargrave, many of you guys have not heard of Bubbles Hargrave, which frankly is an incredible name. Bubbles, he played for the Reds from 1921 to 1928 and was really good. He won the National League batting title when he hit .353 in 1926. He's when it comes to all-time wins above replacement for Reds catchers, he's number four on the list. And he's a guy that most of you all, I'm guessing, have never heard of, Bubbles Hargrave. Born July 15th, 1892 in New Haven, Indiana. But that dude could play, and, you know, I don't know. Bubbles Hargrave. Either of you want to talk about Bubbles?
I mean, he should be number one on the nickname catcher list, right?
He's way up there. It's a good name.
Yeah, I had him. I had him three because he actually has a higher OPS than Bench and Lombardi. So just I guess just look at the offensive numbers. I tend to give a little bit of a bump. I didn't do a deep dive comparing him and your guys' number three on the defensive spectrum. You know, from back then. I didn't.
I mean, could you even do it? I mean, realistically, like he played in the
20s. What we knew. Yeah. Like, I don't
know, maybe find something on Ken Burns or something. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, higher OPS than Bench. So,
go isn't Bubbles. That something? Yeah, good old Bubbles. You know, if anyone's ever seen the television show The Wire, Bubbles on The Wire used to be my favorite Bubbles, but I'm starting to think it's Bubbles Hargrave now. Absolutely. Good old Bubs. I don't know. I'm trying to struggle to find things to say about Bubbles Hargrave, who no one's listened to us ever heard. Okay, so number three on our lists, you had Bubbles Hargrave, Nick. So let me go ahead. And actually, I'll ask you to talk about your number four, who ended up being number three on Doug and I's list for top five Reds catchers. If you want to go ahead and talk about your number four,
yeah, Ed Bailey at number four. It reminds me of George Bailey, my favorite all time TV or movie character.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot more on Mr. Yeah. Bailey.
What do you say?
Had a great career for the Reds.
He did. He had a fantastic career. Made I think he made six All-Star teams total. I think five of those were with the Reds. And the thing about Ed Bailey, if I remember this correctly, 1953 to 1961, he was a Red and just fantastic Reds catcher. But I think he was traded away. Maybe I hope I'm not remembering this incorrectly, but traded away in the middle of that 1961 season where the Reds made the World Series ultimately. So he didn't get to play with them. But there are still some guys who saw Ed Bailey play. Not me. I'm old, but I'm not that old. But Ed Bailey, number three on Doug and I's list, number four on Nick's. Doug, anything to say about Ed Bailey?
He's on one of my favorite baseball cards. I don't remember what year. I want to say it's a 58 tops, but he's on there. I don't know. It was one of the first like vintage baseball cards I got as a kid, and I just for some reason it just always sticks out to me.
You know, we thought this was a good idea to go position by position, top five. Catcher is not the most scintillating discussion. I will concede that right now. We all had the same number two in terms of the best Reds catcher of all time, but top five Reds catchers, and it's Ernie Lombardi. Ernie Lombardi, of course, Hall of Famer, won an MVP award. Let's see, that was in 1938. I don't remember the 1938 season, but won the batting title a couple times, All-Star eight times. Big nose, Ernie Lombardi. Anything either of you have to say about Ernie Lombardi? I mean, he's a baseball legend.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in plenty of other organizations, he'd be number one on their all time catcher list. He's just unfortunately got to go up against the greatest catcher of all time.
Yeah, and let's go ahead. We all had number one. Nick, tell us about our number one.
Number one is a Mr. Johnny Bench had a pretty decent career for the Reds. Just the amount of games he caught, like you're never going to see that again. And like that in itself is just ridiculous. Like when you look at today's game, like that he was able to just stay healthy for that long and catch that many games, yet alone, you know, career, you know, 125 weighted runs created plus with 8,000 plate appearances, most of those behind the plate. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not sure we really need to spend too much time extolling the virtues of John Lee Bench. I mean, you know, when you look at career wins above replacement, he had three times as many wins above replacement than any catcher in Reds history, career wins above replacement for the Reds. Individual seasons, wins above replacement. He had eight of the top 10 And of the top 16, I think he had, 13 of the top 16 individual seasons for wins above replacement for a Reds catcher. Johnny Bench was good.
Yeah.
Is that the hottest take I've ever had here?
Maybe.
Well, do you guys have him as the greatest overall player in Reds history? I mean, I do.
I mean, I think so. Just because, and I think that there's a few arguments you can make, but I think just the fact that he's the best catcher of all time, he's the best player at his position, that sways things for me.
I don't have him as the best Reds player of all time. I have two players ahead of him. Number one is Joe Morgan. But listen, I agree. It's arguable between those two. You talk about career versus peak. But Joe Morgan, to me, is the best Reds player of all time. The other guy that I think is probably in the conversation is Adam Dunn.
Not Billy Hamilton?
Well, Billy Hamilton's top five.
What about Billy. Jeff Francis? I mean, you know, he just got inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, and he did pitch in one game for the Reds.
He's the only Cincinnati Red in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, right?
I honestly have no idea.
You think probably anyone else?
There may be somebody else in the future that gets into that, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know if you can think of it.
maybe Joey, Joseph Daniel. I have Bench as my second best Red of all time, but I can't argue with anyone who says he's the single best Cincinnati Red of all time. Other thoughts about catchers? I think we've kind of exhausted that at this point, right?
Yep.
Okay. How about some viewer mail questions? Anybody interested in answering some viewer mail questions?
Me. I am.
Good.
Let's do it.
Nick is as well. Okay. These questions, the first group of questions come from our friends at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy, where you two can support this dumb show. First question comes from Joe Farsing. Joe's question: who are the Reds' bottom five catchers, and why are they all Dan Bilardello? That's really not nice. Who are the worst Reds? I'll let you all jump in. Who are the worst Reds catchers you've ever seen? If you want to say that publicly,
I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. That you made it to the big leagues, you're a good catcher.
Paul Bocco was pretty bad. I'll say that.
Paul Bocco,
60 weighted runs created plus. There's a guy that has a 10 weighted runs created plus, Raleigh Hemsley.
I remember him.
Played for the Reds. I don't even know. He actually only played like a half of a season, so he doesn't even have a full season, but he was in the 20s through 40s. So,
you guys are a little younger than me, but I remember a string of pretty bad Reds catchers. Bilardello, Alex Trevino, Dave Van Gorder. It was a pretty rough go for me when I first became a Reds fan, post-bench. So, Joe Farsing, why are you trying to, slam Bilardello and the guys who weren't quite as good as, I don't know, Bo Diaz?
Bo Diaz.
I just wanted to mention Bo Diaz. Rest in peace.
Honestly,
Kyle Kapler.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No. Honestly, like, if you look at the Reds over the last 30 years, they don't really have that many like terrible catchers, like hitting wise. You know, you have some teams that have guys that were just awful. The Reds don't have that many guys that were like at the bottom of the barrel. So, yeah, good for them.
I think we've been spoiled by the fact that we had John Lee Bench, and so everyone pales in comparison. But you're not wrong about that. I mean, that Hannigan Hernandez combination. Back when the Reds were competitive, that was a great duo, and yeah. I like the Reds duo this past year, frankly.
Yep.
Too bad one of them moved away. All right, next question comes from Kyle Kapler. Kyle Kapler says this: Kevin Mitchell, Kevin Youkilis, or Kevin Quackenbush, which are Hall of Fame worthy?
I mean, Kevin Mitchell and Kevin Youkilis were both very good baseball players. Put them in team Hall of Fames? Sure. I can get behind that.
Kyle Kapler, come on, man. Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Euclid. Had a really, really good career. One of the players that sort of changed the game, in some ways with being like the on-base Greek god, as they said in Moneyball. So, yeah, I don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy, unfortunately.
Yeah, no.
Nice career, though.
Cincinnati area guy, which is why he's on this list. He never played for the Reds, but Kevin Mitchell, I will always say, is the best Reds hitter that I've ever seen. Best hitter in a Reds uniform I've ever seen. And it was he's not one of the best players in Reds history, but man, when he was on the field, I've never seen a guy that could hit like that. He couldn't do anything else but hit, but that guy could flat out hit when he was healthy and when he was playing. That's probably a hot take. Reds hitter of all time. But
I mean, it is a hot take because you said he could only hit, and I saw him catch a ball with his bare hand. So don't talk to me about he can only hit.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I'm surprised you saw that at your tender age, you kids. All right, next question comes from Branch Brown. Branch's question, should Tyler Stevenson bring back the sweet Joe Oliver mullet to the Reds' backstop? Joe Oliver, friend of the podcast, but I'm going to let you all handle that one because there's only one correct answer.
Go ahead, Nick.
I support it, man. Good. It's good for his brand. He will have fans that aren't even fans of the Reds just because of the mullet. So do it for the brand, Tyler.
Look, Doug? Tyler he just got married this offseason. Please do not do that to his poor wife. Just not yet.
He already got pictures. He already got the wedding pictures. They're out of the way. They're paid for.
Oh, goodness.
And some great Jonathan India videos as well from that wedding. But the answer is yes. He should absolutely. Tyler Stevenson needs to grow a mullet. What are we waiting for here?
Sorry, Tyler. You lost. I tried to help you, but 2-1, they overruled me. You got to do it.
Now, here's what I'm going to say. If Tyler Stevenson grows a mullet, I will grow a mullet.
I won't. Not happening.
What?
Viewership okay, will go up.
No, I'm not sure about that, but Jerry Seduth. Okay, this is a good question that I've heard a lot in the last couple weeks. What pressure does a Bengals AFC title and appearance in the Super Bowl put on Bob Castellini to produce a winner? Will he take any steps in that direction? I'll toss that to you first, Nick. Is there any pressure on Bob Castellini now that the Bengals are a almost championship level team?
I don't really think so. I don't think there's much. I mean, I think, however, Reds could go sign Nick Castellanos and everything's forgiven by the time opening day rolls around. Like, they could just sign that one player and everyone completely forget about everything else. I think most fans would, at least. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, NFL and baseball is just so different. You could say whatever you want about the Reds, but it's so different. And I mean, I think there's pressure to be competitive to win a title. I don't think it changes that personally.
Doug, you're a longtime Bengals Reds fan. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think that what Nick said is pretty much where I'm at. When you get in the NFL, especially in today's NFL, it's a quarterback driven league. You have one of the best quarterbacks. It's really tough to not be good. In baseball, you have to build a whole team. You can have Mike Trout for 10 years, and basically you've got nothing to show for it. You have to build a full team, and that takes a lot more than it does in the NFL. You know, we discussed earlier that we all kind of feel that the Reds they're good, but they need to make some changes to get to that next level. But I don't think that Castellini or the Reds front office are going to feel that pressure to really kind of quote-unquote go all in to, at least on paper, look like they could be a team that could go play in the World Series right now, which is kind of what you have to do to quote-unquote compete with the Bengals because they're in the Super Bowl. I think that it's a different thing. And like Nick said, you know, if they're competitive, I think that that's good enough for where they're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. And for, I don't know, maybe a little bit different reason or slightly different. I don't think it has any impact whatsoever on the thinking of the Castellanians right now. I don't know. It just is what it is. I think Nick's right. If they go and sign Castellanos, then Reds fans are probably going to be all in to the extent that the Castellanians want them to be. But I just – the question specifically asked about Bob Castellini. I don't think Bob Castellini cares at this point. And I think that Phil Castellini is kind of in charge, and it's all about the dollar bills, y'all, or however they say it.
That's how you say it.
One other quick point on that is, you know, just on how different, you know, baseball in the NFL is. I was looking back at 2012, you know, the team that won 97 games. They had games in September in Cincinnati where there was less than 20,000 fans in the stands. So it's so different. You know what I mean? Like, the Reds being as good as they possibly can be in the regular season isn't going to draw fans into September every night, you know? So,
yeah, well, they're not going to draw me, I'll tell you that. But that's a different conversation. Next question comes from our buddy Carl J. Mitz. Carl says, who's our backup catcher this year if Kyle Farmer isn't going to be considered as such? Is it Chris Oakey? Also curious, who would crack that top five catcher list if you took Johnny Bench out of the equation? Well, I think we've given some names about who would be in the top five list without Johnny Bench. But that question about the backup catcher, I'll let you all discuss it. I discussed it a little bit last week, but there's no great answer for it. But I wish I had a better answer, because the backup, quote unquote, backup catcher is going to play 40% of the games, I think, right? I mean, Oakey is in that mix, I guess, but does it matter?
I'm not going to go absolutely crazy, but maybe a little bit crazy. If Chris Oakey's in the mix and actually gets playing time at the big league level this year, other than an emergency call up, I will eat a Reds hat. I will eat it on this podcast, Chad.
Can I be one of those 1919 or whatever Reds caps that Coop always wants? Can we do that? Can you eat one of those?
I will eat one of those just to spite Coop. I think that, I mean, at least going into spring training, Andrew Knapp is probably
the guy.
That's who I
said last week.
I think that he's probably the guy that, if they're not going to, you know, count on it being Kyle Farmer. Andrew Knapp's the guy that's got the most experience.
It's not a good option.
Andrew Knapp had a 132 weighted runs created plus in 2020. I mean, that was a short
season. This is why I wanted Nick on the show tonight. I love it. Yes.
I mean, it was a short season, but I mean, if he's your backup catcher, I think he's grades out pretty poor defensively. In some regards, and I might get crushed for this, and that's okay, I'm used to it. In some regards, I think it's good that Tucker Barnhart is not a Red for Tyler Stevenson's development.
Ooh.
And I say that, because, you know, we had Devin Mesoraco on our show, and he talked about that 2014 season, the Reds traded Ryan Hannigan, and he swore that was what helped him. It gave him the confidence to take that next level. So in some regards, you know, it would be hard to play Tyler Stevenson as much as he should play in 2022 if you have Tucker Barnhart. It would. Now, and I mean, I guess you could play him other positions, but is that going to hurt his long-term catching development? So, you know, in some regards, there is some positive to that. And I think Knapp can be, you know, a decent backup catcher. You know, do most people know most teams' backup catchers that are in the playoffs? Like, does it, you know, I mean, unless Stevenson gets injured, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I mean, I'm all for everyone kind of piling on Nick and slamming him for this. I don't want to discourage anyone from doing that, but that's an interesting thought, because my best case scenario was this year the Reds keep Barnhart and they kind of flip the roles a little bit. Let Tyler Stevenson be the primary guy. Tucker Barnhart become the backup. And I think, frankly, Tucker Barnhart could be a good backup for the next 5-7 years. I really believe that. 5 years, we'll say. So, but that's an interesting thought. I can't say that's incorrect.
Does Tucker Barnhart, you know, is he fine with that role? You know, does Tucker right. Barnhart starting caliber catcher? I mean, you know, these guys are, they work hard, you know. That kind of stuff. There is other factors into, you know, Tucker Barnhart than I think than just kind of meets the surface. Sure, if he would just be like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, play 40 games and start and be completely happy and on the bench. But I wouldn't if I was Tucker Barnhart. Would you?
I would, yes, because I just want to disagree with you. All right, speaking of disagree with you, I'm sorry, but Doug, I'm going to have to toss this one to Nick first because the next question is really not very nice. James Urban says, no, I don't really have a question this week, but since Nick Kirby is joining, I must bring up hashtag Kirby hates Farmer. Ask him about how much he hates Kyle Farmer, if you wish. Is that true, Nick, that you hate Kyle Farmer? How did that become a rumor?
As the great John Rothstein says, it spreads. It is everywhere. I have never gotten more hate about a player on both sides of the spectrum than Kyle Farmer. Early in the year, I kind of poo-pooed on him, and people hated me for that when we did well. And at the end of the year, I said, you know, I didn't have a problem with him starting over Barrero, and I got pooped on for that. So I don't know. I mean, I love Kyle Farmer, but yeah, people did not like my takes on Kyle.
Doug, what do you think about the fact that Nick evidently, that's what I hear, he hates Kyle Farmer?
I believe it to be 100% true. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Next question comes from our friend Rich Thompson. Rich asks, in your memories as Reds fans, what's the most memorable defensive play by any Reds player? Do either of you have like a most memorable defensive play? I'll let either of you jump in.
I've got three. Can I give three?
Sure, why not?
All right, so who will ever forget kicking the ball from the outfield? Who will ever forget butt tag?
BP.
And then Ryan Friel being Superman. That diving catch where I feel like he glided through the air for like 20 feet on that catch. But there were a lot from Billy Hamilton that also stick out. But those three are at the very top for me.
Nick?
I've got one. It's definitely in no way the best defensive play, but most memorable. Civil rights game 2010. Reds are playing the Cardinals. I think the Reds are up a run in the ninth. Someone hits a ball up against the wall. Heisey plays it perfectly off the wall, throws it in. Orlando Cabrera, perfect relay to the plate. I think Hernandez makes a tag, and the Reds win on a walk-off tag at the plate. And that was just one of those really cool moments where that 2010 team, I felt like, oh, hey, these guys, you know, might be for real. It's still like, I think in May, it was just a really big moment in that season. So that's one that always just sticks out to me.
All good choices. I'm going to go with, though, this was August 6th of 2017. And it was a ball hit back to the mound. And it wasn't that hit very hard necessarily. It wasn't even that difficult a play to make, but Luis Alberto Bonilla dropped down, made the play, tossed it to first for the out. It was just so legendary. And I'll just never forget it. It was his last appearance as a Red, and I don't know. I dream about it sometimes.
I get it.
Hard to top that.
No, you don't.
No, I don't. I'm just trying to support you here, Chad. That's all.
I appreciate that, buddy. I do. All right. Joey Gaditza, our buddy from Canada. Hey, guys, any chance the Reds take a look at Andrew McCutchen? I think he'd be a good fit. Now, I started to mention him earlier when we were talking about the outfield. I don't think the Reds look at him. I don't expect the Reds to sign anyone. But Andrew McCutchen, Tyler Naquin, platoon, how does that look? Right? Not bad, right?
I love McCutchen. He is a legit good, great hitter against left-handed pitching at this point in his career. He's proven it the last couple of years. The StatCast data backs it up that it's not anything fluky. He would be a perfect platoon with Naquin. I mean, I think it just depends on his price. But hey, if we're talking a rush 2 weeks of free agency, is Andrew McCutchen the first guy on most teams' list? Probably not. You know, maybe his price tag falls down and the Reds, you know, say, hey, this is a guy we'd, you know, like to take a shot on. He would be a perfect fit for the Reds, though.
I wanted him so bad 7 years ago. You know, I mean, I just love that guy. Doug, any thoughts about that?
No, that's, you guys are right.
Thank you so much. Hooper Powell asks
the Marlon Bird special after his career's, you know, at the end.
Oof. Yeah, Marlon Bird. Hooper Powell, what comes first, a left-handed throwing catcher or Chad at a Bruce Springsteen concert?
Oh, that's an easy one. Left-handed throwing catcher, because it's already happened. It already came first.
And we'll get another one before I go to a Springsteen concert, right?
That I don't know. And hear me out, Chad. You love your children, and maybe somehow they convince you to go, and you'll do it because you love them.
Okay, I do love my children, but maybe you're overestimating how much I love my children. I really hope they don't watch this.
I tried.
Oh, what's your thoughts on Bruce Springsteen, Nick Kirby? Be careful how you answer this. You may never be back.
I mean, I don't really have a thought. I kind of just feel like whatever. I don't listen to Springsteen. I don't have like a hatred of him. I thought he had a really good song that was the TBS intro though for the playoffs like 10 years ago. I kind of jammed to that, but that's the extent of my Springsteen fandom.
Did you hear the song where he talked about a high school pitcher throwing a speedball by you? That was garbage. That was just complete garbage.
I have no idea what you're talking about, which tells you all you need to know about how I feel about Springsteen.
There you go. Okay, so let's rapid fire, if we could, some questions from our fans on I don't want to call them fans. That's saying it too much. They tolerate us on the Twitters. If the roster currently this comes from our buddy at Burke_Franklin on the Twitters. If the roster currently stays as it is with no major trades, where would you predict the Reds finish in the Central? Rapid fire. What do you think? First, Doug.
Third.
Nick.
Third wild card.
Ooh, I was going to say third wild card conversation. I'm not sure I'm willing to go there just yet. But, yeah, I think that's reasonable. Seth Shaner, at Shanerbaum on Twitter. It would stink either way, but I can't help but think that the timing of this lockout, less than 2 years after the shortened 2020 season, should have these folks acting with more urgency to get a deal done. Seth, that's not really a question, but I guess the answer is yes.
Like I said earlier, I feel that one side is actually trying to get things done. So,
yes, and I would add that I don't feel like either side, one side's significantly worse than the other, has any sense of the long-term damage that this will cause and doesn't care. And I think that's the most frustrating part.
I think that's true, especially given, the way things are going in the sports world overall. Baseball's at a kind of tenuous moment here, but I don't sense that the long-term health of the game is particularly important to anyone right now. Dr. M. Bitt, Mike Bittenbender. We've already really answered this, but I'll go ahead and say the question. Will Bob Castellini feel more pressure to spend money to win now that his neighbor on the banks is playing championship caliber football? I don't think we think so. Nate, at Jaja Brotherhood, that's a good name. Will Chris Collinsworth be able to contain himself while calling the Super Bowl?
I hope not. That'd be entertaining.
That would be entertaining. Chris Collinsworth, I don't know. At Jesse Spriggs, do you think the Reds have taken notice of what's going on down the road with the Bengals? If so, will it cause them to put more effort into improving the on-field product? Again, we've answered that one. That's what everyone wants to know. I don't know if either of you have anything else to say about that.
I mean, I feel that lately the Reds have been more focused on their promotions and work off the field than stuff that's been going on the field, and I just expect that to continue.
Absolutely. Oh, so our last question comes from Nick Howard, at Nick Howard. This is not the Cincinnati Reds minor league pitcher, Nick Howard. Nick Howard, who knows that I have a kind of affinity for Dave Matthews too, but Dave Letterman, the world's most dangerous podcast, etc. He asks, when will there be a live studio audience, and could I win one of these babies when you have one. Let's see if I can show that. It's a it's a big ass ham. That's a Dave Letterman. That's a, if you're not watching on YouTube, you're just missing out. It's a David Letterman. We are going to have a live studio audience sooner rather than later. And I guess I need to ask, will each of you commit tonight to appearing on our live episode when we do that? Probably somewhere in the Cincinnati area.
If it's in the Cincinnati area and I happen to not be on the road traveling for baseball, sure.
Okay, Doug refuses to commit fully. Nick?
I would do everything within my power, but I am 5 hours from Cincinnati, so, and I got two.
So Nick has refused to commit as well. So
it's been fun being on the show, guys. I'm sure I'm never coming back again.
I'm pretty upset. So you're not going to win a honey baked ham for me, either of you. Nick, before we end up here, final thoughts about the Reds or where we're going?
Wait and see mode. I mean, I hope the season gets started. I mean, I think there's plenty of reasons to be, you know, positive about the team, even if you don't like everything that's gone along. So go Reds. And thanks for having me, Chad. And one last note, all complaints should always be directed to Chad Dodson, because Chad is the person that got me off of a blog that had like 3 viewers and I was just screaming into the void all the time. So he's the one who put me on the digital pages of RedLeagueNation.com. So all complaints to Chad.
I remember that, and glad I did it. So thank you so much for being here tonight, Nick. Doug?
I'm just going to echo what Nick said. I think that we're all in wait-and-see mode, but hopefully we don't have to wait too long and we get to see. I think the team is good, not great, but I don't think there's much way they're going to be bad. And given what we've all been through the last, I don't know, most of our lifetimes, I'll take that for now.
Yeah, I'm with you. Let me just tell all of you, you know, obviously I say every week, go to Red League Nation. Talking about the Reds since 2005 at Red League Nation. Go there every day. Great conversation going on. And I do want to encourage all of you that, certainly the ones that watch the show on YouTube, go to Late Night Reds Talk. Find that on YouTube. Smash that subscribe button. Make sure you smash the subscribe button for us first. But then go on over to Late Night Reds Talk. Really subscribe. It's the fantastic. It's just, it's great every week. And so I can't say enough about Red League Nation, Reds Minor Leagues, and Late Night Reds Talk. And I encourage everyone to jump on board. There's enough room for all of us here. So I guess I'll say for Nick Kirby and Doug Gray and you know what? And for Bubbles Hargrave, the legend. This is Chad Dodson saying so long, everyone.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.